House Committee on Judiciary come to order. Today is Wednesday, February 11th, 2015. First, I'm going to call the first two House bills up for a public hearing. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2205 and 2206.
We need to introduce one bill.
I'll back up there and do those. We'll introduce committee measures.
Open a work session?
Open a work session.
We're after our usual start.
No, we're doing a work session right now to introduce committee measures. Chair Barker, I move the following LC be introduced as a committee bill, LC 2023, dated November 25th, 2014.
Representative Williamson moves to introduce the LC as a committee measure. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Seeing none, so moved. Okay, now we'll open the public hearing on House Bills 2205 and 2206.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, House Bill 2205 comes to us from Representatives Huffman and Taylor. The bill establishes the fund to end commercial sexual exploitation of children. House Bill 2205 specifies that monies in the fund are continuously appropriated to fund services, interventions, and treatment for children who have been or may become victims of commercial sex trafficking. There's no revenue impact and an indeterminate fiscal impact with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. No amendments, and House Bill 2205 is ready to move. House Bill 2206 also comes to us from Representatives Huffman and Taylor. The bill renames the crime of patronizing a prostitute to the crime of commercial sexual exploitation. There is no
solicitation?
Exploitation.
Okay. This is wrong here.
Yeah. It's a solicitation.
Thank you. Oh, does it do it? Yes.
The agenda says solicitation.
Yeah.
Okay. Let me look.
I'm looking right now. And I apologize. It's commercial sexual solicitation.
Okay.
Renames the crime to commercial sexual solicitation. No revenue impact, no fiscal impact, no amendments, and 2206 is ready to move as well.
Okay, thank you. First, I'd like to call Carolyn Tomei, Representative Huffman, Representative Taylor, and Commissioner Diane McKeel, please.
Kathleen, did you need to start so you could go?
I'll just, yeah.
Okay.
Is there a, do you want to go next, Huffman?
Chair Barker, members of the committee, for the record, I'm State Representative Kathleen Taylor, representing Milwaukee, Oak Grove, and parts of Southeast Portland. I'm here to speak to you about the child sex trafficking bills, HB 2205 and HB 2206. I really just want to thank Representative Tomei for all the work here on the issue. I've been coming to her quote-unquote kitchen cabinet meetings for almost 2 years now. Those meetings have been amazing. Senator Juan Ryden, Oregon Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum, U.S. District Attorney Amanda Marshall, Commissioner Diane McKeel. Many elected officials have attended, as well as law enforcement, agency personnel, health professional, child advocates, and many more. HB 2205 is a product of that group, establishing a statewide structure for the private-public partnership so necessary to helping these children. But I will defer to the others to explain the details of how that will work. I apologize. I do need to get to committee, so they were nice enough to let me go first. And I also just really wanted to be here with Representative Tomei. So anyway, I'll let you go ahead. Huffman, then.
Thank you, Representative Taylor.
Chair Barker, committee, thanks for having us. We just want to introduce a couple of bills that's the continuing good work of this impressive work group that's been together, like Representative Taylor mentioned a lot of the names, some of them I'm sitting here with. When Representative Tomei made the announcement last year that she wasn't going to be coming back, I hadn't met Kathleen Taylor yet, and we didn't.
You need to introduce yourself. For
John Huffman, State Rep, House District 59. I knew that.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Apologies. Hadn't met Kathleen yet and didn't know that she was part of the group, but I called Carolyn and I said, I want to make sure that the ball's not dropped, that we have a legislative contact between the work group and bills to get passed and the good work that needs to be done. And So following me, there are going to be some really certified smart people, some experts in the field of human trafficking, sex trafficking, child sex trafficking, and they're going to explain it better. And I know some of them are on some timelines, so I'm going to shut up, but I'm very glad to be a part of this whole group. And want to warn you that this is just the beginning. We plan on every session having bills until we can get a better grip on this within the state of Oregon. Thank you.
Thank you for your work.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Thank you for allowing me to come to speak today on these two bills, 2205 and 2206. As has been alluded to, we've been working on these issues for several years. Did I mention my name, Carolyn Tomei? I knew that, too.
You used to not have to in this
room. Right. Right. Thank you. I could see there was something on your mind. Representative Taylor mentioned all the wonderful people who had come to the kitchen cabinet, but actually it wasn't a kitchen cabinet. Some of you have been at our house, and it was in our dining room, and it's not that huge, and we had upwards of 24 people at a meeting. It was very exciting, and it was wonderful. And I think some of you know how I can crack the whip. And these people, they were wonderful. You're hear from all these people. I think you might have been at one of our meetings, Representative Leininger. And we started those meetings when we were in the Capitol, so we would meet in the meeting room here. But we knew we needed to continue in order to keep the momentum. So we did continue at our home. And it was wonderful, the people who were invested and involved in this. We've been here before talking about sex trafficking, and I think with you and Representative Krieger in addition, it's been rampant. It's very damaging to the children involved. I want to emphasize these are children. These kids are truly victims, yet they don't always see themselves in that light. Law enforcement often encounters these kids as runaways or delinquents, not yet identifying them as sex traffic victims. So they don't funnel them into appropriate services. Even when they are properly identified, these girls are resistant and often run right back to the streets. We know when they go into a foster home, they go into the front door, and they go out of the back door with their cell phone, and they take some of the other girls with them. So in previous sessions, we've been successful in giving district attorneys better tools to prosecute both the traffickers and the buyers of sex. Last February, the legislature allocated $2 million to open up a specialized residential treatment center for these girls. And I hope you realize how difficult that is, how much time it takes, and it takes an infusion of money. So it really was miraculous that we were able to open this center. I was able to visit it in December before they had children. It is beautiful. It is accessible to the law enforcement people. They will be able to access it. It is just a wonderful facility, wonderful staff, and you'll hear more about them. Margaret Scott from Morrison Family Services is here, and she'll be telling you more about it. Well, all of these are positive steps, but they're not enough. United States District Attorney Amanda Marshall has been passionate about protecting these children. Unfortunately, she can't be here today, but one point she continually made is that this is a statewide problem, not just a Multnomah County or an urban tri-county area problem. And most of these girls are homegrown. These are not foreign girls that have been born in foreign countries. And we know that there are kids trafficked also. But the vast majority of these kids are from Oregon, from the United States. There are many, many people and organizations who want to help, and we need a statewide strategic plan to prioritize and direct these faith-based and nonprofit organizations into the areas of service where they can be most effective. House Bill 2205 does just that. The structure is modeled on the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Fund, the CAMI Fund, in the Crime Victim Services Division of the Department of Justice. It establishes a special fund with an advisory board, which we really need, that can seek out and receive public and private money dedicated to child sex trafficking efforts. Aaron Knott is here to describe those details. The other bill, House Bill 2206, is just a language change.
It was asked for by the Multnomah County District Attorney. We've worked with them for years, as you will remember, both of you and Representative Krieger. It changes the name of the crime of patronizing a prostitute to commercial sexual solicitation. And they'll be explaining shortly why that is needed. Thank you so much for allowing us to come. It is great to see some familiar faces, and it's wonderful seeing some new faces. So thank you.
Good to see you.
Thank you, Chair Barker and representatives. My name's Diane McKeel, and I am a Multnomah County Commissioner. I'm here to testify in support of House Bill 2205 and to share a little bit about our experience in Multnomah County as we've worked to address the issue of CSEC. I was honored to participate in some work group meetings to develop the system of care and concept of this bill and look forward to continued involvement and support of these efforts to address this issue statewide. In 2009, we created a Commercial Sexual Exploitation of Children Steering Committee at Multnomah County. I chair this group, and it is staffed by the Department of Community Justice. This is a victim-focused collaborative with our primary goal to support the victims of CSEC. The strength of this is really in the partners we have at the table, which include law enforcement, prosecution and supervision representatives from the county, the cities, and the U.S. Attorney's Office, DHS Child Welfare CSEC Unit, advocates and nonprofit partners, including LifeWorks Northwest, Janus Youth, Sexual Assault Resource Center, and CARES Northwest. The purpose of our work is to better identify and support survivors of CSEC, to better investigate, prosecute, and supervise offenders, and increase education, prevention, and civic engagement within the community. The steering committee has formed multiple work groups to go into greater depth on specific issues. Some of these groups include a victim service advisory committee, medical and mental health work group, legislative work group, demand reduction team, and a speakers bureau. Some of these partners were also engaged in the kitchen cabinet work group meetings this past year about coordinating these efforts at the state level, and we will continue to partner and support however we can. One example, as Carolyn spoke about, is the state-run shelter for CSEC victims. Whenever I speak with law enforcement and service providers about what the greatest need is, they almost always say safe shelter. Multnomah County opened a shelter in 2011, and this past fall, when the state shelter was under consideration, we were able to share some of the feedback and issues to consider from the experiences of partners involved in our county. The advisory committee created by this legislation would oversee a variety of programs to end commercial sexual exploitation of children in our state. Some of these, such as services or education curriculum for children who may be at risk, outreach and education, and interagency cooperation, that we have developed models that could be helpful for the statewide governance board and replicated at the local level elsewhere. Above all, I'm here to testify in support of this bill because I see this as an opportunity to bring more partners to the table and truly create a strategic statewide response to this important issue. Children across the state are being commercially exploited for sex. The recent study by Portland State and U.S. Attorney Amanda Marshall identified 469 unduplicated cases of CSEC victims in the Portland area alone. Our sheriff's office has identified 421 individuals suspected of trafficking in our community. When we project these numbers out across the state, I think it's clear we are facing a problem that requires a state response. When we see that the most frequent age of residents at our CSEC shelter was only 15 years old, I think it's clear that we need a sense of urgency on this response. House Bill 2205 is an important step forward and establishes the framework for Oregon to end the commercial sexual exploitation of children. And I'm also here on House Bill 2206, and I'll be brief. By changing the name of the statute for patronizing a prostitute, this legislation will help advance our efforts towards treating those who have been forced into commercial sexual exploitation as the victims they are, and better describe the behavior of those who fund this criminal industry by attempting to purchase commercial sex. Under the leadership of Representative Tomei and Representatives Taylor and Huffman, this is an effort that we share statewide. House Bill 2206 before you today is another step forward in our recognition and treatment of boys, girls, and young adults who are forced to engage in this behavior as victims and not be labeled or stigmatized as prostitutes. Additionally, there are instances where this statute may apply where there is no prostitution-related behavior occurring, which I think others are going to touch on this testimony. I don't think there's ever a time that someone who is unable to consent or even just solicited while walking down the street should have to be labeled as a prostitute. This crime is about the attempted purchaser, and I believe this bill moves us forward toward our goals by more accurately capturing the behavior that the offender is engaged in. So I'm pleased to support both of these bills, and thank you for allowing me to come forward and give this testimony. Thank you.
Thank you for driving down today, Commissioner. We appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Yes. Is Aaron Knott next on your list?
Yes, he is.
Good. Okay, thank you.
And I'm going to call Aaron Knott next because he's from needs to be on to another meeting right away. We'll get him in and out.
Thank you, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Aaron Knott. I'm the legislative director for the Oregon Attorney General and Department of Justice, and I was very privileged to serve as a member of this kitchen cabinet alongside the Attorney General, who was a frequent attendee. I think my role within the kitchen cabinet meetings is most fairly described as legal gopher, which I will repeat here, in support of both 2205 and 2206. I'll leave the technical analysis on 2206 to the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, so I'll just note that we at the Attorney General support as well. So in this two-year process, it became very obvious to us as we were working through the multitude of problems in the area of CSEC that we are missing opportunities all throughout the system. One almost ubiquitous characteristic of the victims of sex trafficking is that they do not tell you who they are. So when they're first encountered, say, by police, often for routine crime, something like prostitution for an obvious one, but also shoplifting, drug crimes, they often don't say, "I was trafficked." So they're treated like a typical defendant. That continues when they're arraigned and entered into the criminal justice system. Prosecutors miss it. Defense attorneys miss it. Judges miss it. Probation officers miss it. But also extends into our dependency systems, where they turn up, into our social services. And what we realized when we were trying to tackle this problem is that we need to be comprehensive. This is statewide. And that if we don't analyze and see through all of these lenses, not just as a criminal justice issue, but as a social services issue, as a dependency issue, as a juvenile system issue, we will miss these individuals as we are missing them now. So that was the first significant observation that gave rise to 2205. The second is that the problem of sex trafficking differs from many of the problems faced by Oregonians in that there are significant private funds that are waiting to be dedicated to this problem. This is something we heard time and time again from our federal partners, from representatives in the community, that there is a donor base that is interested in assisting the state engage in a systematic approach to this problem, but there is nowhere to put the money. So why that then zeroed in on the Department of Justice and our Crime Victim Services Division, or CVSD in particular? CVSD wears multiple hats, but one of the most significant is a pass-through agency. We're routinely, if not predominantly, used for that purpose. We administer the child abuse multidisciplinary committees, which you heard about earlier, DAVAPs, Violence Against Women Act money, all comes in and is then distributed appropriately, sometimes via grants, sometimes we're just the pass-through mechanism. And Public-private partnership sounds novel, I mean, especially for a state agency, but there's pretty rich precedent for it already. In the run-up to this, I looked at the Sexual Assault Victim Emergency, or SAVE, Fund, which was created by the legislature quite a while ago, and it's ORS 147399, if anyone's really curious. But basically what this fund does is if somebody suffers a sexual assault, either on the juvenile or adult level, and they need a forensic exam or a so-called rape kit, that can be billed back to our Crime Victims Compensation Fund. This fund, which is funded partially with private monies, helps us offset those costs. There's other precedent for these public-private partnerships throughout our justice system and our larger statutory regime, and I could talk about it. But the real point that I want to drive home here is that we need to provide a mechanism for these conversations to move forward. And if there are resources available, especially resources outside of a perpetually strained general fund allocation, we need to investigate them. 2205 is the mechanism that will allow those partnerships to move forward, and I urge an aye vote. I'm open for any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Knott.
Thank you.
Next, I call Nita Bellis, Roger Martin, and Claire McLeod. You can go in any order, but please remember to identify yourself for the record.
My name is Nita Bellis, and I am from Bend, Oregon. And I am here to kind of represent our side of the state. I'm the regional director for Oregonians Against Trafficking Humans over in Central Oregon. I also have another nonprofit that I operate called In Our Backyard. I have a book by the same title on human trafficking in the United States. And In Our Backyard, among other things, I just got back from Super Bowl, where I have been for the last 6 years working in anti-trafficking efforts surrounding Super Bowl with top law enforcement and other government agencies. And so I'm familiar with human trafficking as it exists across the nation. First of all, I would like to echo what some others have said, that human trafficking happens statewide, and it absolutely does happen in other than the metropolitan areas. I put on Facebook before I left that I was heading over here, and a survivor from Portland put this on. She's actually from Bend. She was trafficked, met her trafficker in Portland, and was trafficked throughout the state. She said, smaller cities was our main stops. The demand is higher in smaller towns as well, because most everyone knows everyone. And no John wants to run into a female he just solicited the night before while he's at the grocery store with his family or at his job. It's illegal, and the price to pay is high. This is a no-brainer. We shouldn't have to wait for it to become transparent before the matter gets addressed. This is serious stuff. So talking about how she was trafficked in the smaller towns, another instance of human trafficking in smaller towns, I was recently asked about trafficking in Baker, somebody who is going over there to speak. And one of the first victims that I was referred from law enforcement in Bend was a victim who was first trafficked out of Baker. And she was a student at COCC, our local community college. And when I sat down with her for the first time, the first thing she said is, I come from a wealthy family out of Baker, Oregon. And so to kind of undergird that this doesn't just happen to the poor and disenfranchised, this happens to our kids. And as somebody else said, they are mostly American kids. We put these stickers in restrooms, inside restroom stalls throughout Central Oregon. And because that way, if somebody is in a stall, they're without their trafficker maybe for the only time. And she had seen one of these. And so because of that, she was able to relate to me because I was connected with a sticker when we first talked. So that helped us talk more quickly. But again, she's from small town. And I know these bills are about sex trafficking of minors, but I would also like to mention that as we go forward in legislative sessions, that there is absolutely another problem, and that is with adult sex trafficking victims and labor trafficking. The reason that I do this is because I think it's the worst atrocity on the planet, and we've got to link arms to fight it. Jimmy Carter is speaking at a university today, and he says this is the worst and the most pervasive unaddressed human rights violation on Earth. And I would just suggest that we have a grand opportunity here as legislators in the state of Oregon to change that. According to Polaris Project, they rate all of the states, but not just on domestic minor sex trafficking. They rate them on labor and adult sex trafficking as well. They say we have three areas that are lacking here in the state of Oregon. Posting the human trafficking hotline, that's a no-brainer, and I know there are private foundations that would chip in for that to get that done. Safe harbor, and that is vitally important in this fight, and vacating convictions for sex trafficking victims. There was a man who was sentenced just last year, Hightower, and one of his victims is a friend of mine, and she's trying to get her convictions vacated. It's very important so they can go on with life. So in summary, I just want to thank you all for taking time to hear this, for caring about this. Obviously, I can see your faces. You care about this issue, and I just want to thank you and let you know I'm available to help you in any way that we can, and especially to represent the other side of the state. Thank you.
Thank you for coming.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Roger.
Excuse me, Smith.
Go right ahead.
It's not really a question. Do you have an extra one of those stickers?
Sure.
Just before you leave today.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Roger Martin. I represent the Oregon Catholic Conference. That's the Portland Archdiocese, which is west of the Cascades, and the Baker Diocese, which is in eastern Oregon. We strongly support these two bills and any other bills that will practically attack the problem that's been so well described just a moment ago. I want to speak just briefly to 2205. In that bill is an advisory committee. I met this morning with Dr. Burkle, who is the executive director of Oregon Catholic Charities. It's an organization very large in the Portland area that has a number of functions. One of them is housing. And I suggested to him that the safe harbor that was just mentioned, the need for more housing. And he said, yes, that's something that we do housing. They have over 500 mainly low-income housing units in the state of Oregon now and plans for another equal amount in the coming years. I would like to suggest that someone from Catholic Charities might be appointed to the advisory committee because they're very good at that and they're very good at raising money. And it's been aptly pointed out there is money available for this. The one other thing I'd like to add is somewhere down the line in the next few weeks, you're going to be hearing from the dancing industry, the new dancing clubs all over, and even, I guess, somebody wants to improve the working conditions. When you get those people here, ask them about their employment records, because that's one of the key problems that the district attorneys will tell you, is that you go to a dance club and say, Jane Doe, well, I didn't have anybody like that. They don't know. They don't keep records. I think there should be a requirement for record keeping. And before you start giving them any help in working conditions, let's make sure that condition gets taken care of. I'd like to now introduce Claire McLeod, who is with me, who wants to talk on these two bills. Claire is a student at St. Mary's Academy in Portland. For those of you who don't know, it's probably the oldest high school in Oregon, at least in the metropolitan area. It dates to the 1850s. They have 700 students, and I'm proud of it because my daughter graduated from St. Mary's a number of years ago. And Claire has some inside information because she's of the age of the very people we're talking about.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, thank you.
Say your name, please.
My name is Claire McLeod, and I'm a junior in high school, and I'm a board member of the student-led nonprofit Youth Ending Slavery. Youth Ending Slavery, or YES for short, has a mission to combat modern-day slavery by raising awareness about its prevalence in our world and empowering youth to be advocates for change. We focus on local sex trafficking as well as international trafficking issues. While our main line of work involves education and raising awareness, While our main line of work involves education and raising awareness, YES also raises money for local and international organizations that work directly with victims of human trafficking. We believe that educating youth about the existence of modern-day slavery is crucial due to the fact that the rising generation has both the opportunity and the responsibility to create a world where unjust practices in the name of profit are not tolerated. I've also had the opportunity to volunteer at Rahab Sisters, which is a shelter for women involved in the sex industry. Each Friday, we serve dinner and gather toiletries for women on Southeast 82nd Avenue in Portland. It's humbling to see women come in each week and graciously enjoy what we can offer them. The mere fact that these women are reaching out for help shows that the sex industry is not glamorous, safe, or even a choice career path. By the end of the night, these women do have to go back to their line of work, but I try to remind myself that at least we have given them 2 or 3 hours to simply enjoy company and a good meal. This opportunity has given faces and names to my work with YES. People affected by human trafficking are marginalized and vulnerable. They should not be stigmatized or stereotyped. They should be respected and supported. Today, I'm here to support the change that House Bill 2206 would elicit. By replacing the terminology patronizing a prostitute with the description commercial sexual solicitation, the activity that actually takes place would be more accurately described. I've spoken with several victims of sexual exploitation and heard countless other victims' perspectives through documentaries and public events. Each person I've listened to has clearly expressed their desire to be treated as a victim rather than a criminal. They do not and should not have to label themselves as prostitutes simply because that is how society chooses to see them. This terminology change would ensure the victims that protection and consolation. Sexual exploitation is a stigmatized and inaccurately stereotyped industry in our culture. The very word ensues the idea that those involved are there by personal choice, which simply is not the case. Most often, those involved in prostitution are forced into work because of economic hardship or physical and mental intimidation. These people are not prostitutes. They are being prostituted. These people are not criminals. They are victims of violence, and they act without agency. They are exploited both commercially and sexually. This change is the first step in a long process to force people to accept the exploitation that occurs every day within our own communities. One of my fellow board members consistently reminds us to use clear and accurate prose when discussing situations such as these. The most significant terminology she encourages us to use is trafficker rather than pimp. In a similar fashion to patronizing a prostitute, labeling traffickers as pimps misrepresents the extent of their harm. These outdated and inaccurate words do not capture the true nature of the situation. By implementing a change within Oregon law, the victims will be better protected, offenders will be more accurately depicted, the general public will be better informed, and we as a community will be able to progress with confidence towards a safer future. Thank you.
Thank you. That's very impressive testimony. I really appreciate you coming down and doing that. Thank you. Next, I'll call Wynn Wakula, Kristen Haydell, and Joel Shapiro.
Wynn Wakula, Executive Director for FAST, which stands for Fight Against Sex Trafficking, and also Fight Against Slavery / Trafficking, and former Director of OATH. And thank you, Brent, for all the work you've done on this from way, way back when. I really appreciate it. Chair Barker and committee, this has been an ongoing problem. Both Commissioner McKeel and I started working on this back in 2008. And I've just got to say, both of these things are really good. I've met with people from World Affairs Council, and we've had the opportunity to meet with people from other countries on human trafficking. And I would bring in police and DA's office and different organizations, and we would meet with them. And I think it was the group from India, and they had already visited other cities in the United States, and they said, we're doing more here than anywhere else in the country. And I think 2205 helps us stay as the leaders in this. I think it's very necessary, and I want to keep that reputation going. As far as renaming it 2206, when you look at a dead body, you don't say the crime was they created a dead body. You say it's murder. You put the attention back to the person who committed the crime, not on the person who was victimized. So I think it's important to keep this pointed towards the person who created the crime. That's it.
Thank you.
Chair Williamson, or I'm, pardon me, I'm Chair Barker, Vice Chair Williamson, Vice Chair Olson, and members of the committee. My name is Kirsten Heindel. I am the Youth Services Coordinator for the Center for Hope and Safety, formerly Mid Valley Women's Crisis Service, and we are an agency that serves victims and survivors of domestic violence, sexual assault, stalking, and human trafficking. As the youth advocate, I also work, provide direct services and advocacy to victims of CSEX, so commercial sexual exploitation of children and adults who are sex trafficking victims. I'm here today in support of House Bill 2205 to establish the fund to end commercial sexual exploitation of children. And I'm just going to talk a little bit about my experience as an advocate and what I have seen. The positive outcomes that we can achieve when the services that this fund would provide support to. As an advocate, I do a lot of community education, working on prevention. I train service providers such as child welfare caseworkers, self-sufficiency workers, folks who work in the juvenile department, so Oregon Youth Authority here in our local juvenile department, teachers, school counselors. And what I've seen throughout doing a lot of this community education is that more folks have been reaching out to our agency, either directing victims to us, referring them, and also being able to provide advocacy themselves, being able to identify victims of trafficking because, as folks had mentioned before, they can be very difficult to identify. A lot of times they don't identify as victims, and they can be runaway homeless. They can be from really wealthy families. But being able to provide that education really helps service providers. Just over the last 4.5 years, I've been able to provide community education to almost 25,000 people, and a vast majority of those presentations were on sex trafficking and the commercial sexual exploitation of children. So we have a lot of info out in our community. Also being able to provide advocacy, something that has been a huge struggle and issue in Oregon is that we don't have as many advocates that are trained in trauma-informed care, how to provide those services. It's really difficult to provide appropriate services for victims unless you have some of that extensive training. We need more advocates just in general in the system that know how to do this, and just to be able to provide that specific advocacy for youth. In the juvenile department, I spend a lot of time down in Oak Creek, the Girls Youth Correctional Facility, and providing advocacy for some of the youth who have been incarcerated. A lot of them are victims of CSEC, and when I have been able to work with them, something that I've seen is every youth that's come out of there has connected up with me and reached out for extra support once they've left the facility. One girl that I was able to work with, she contacted me just a day after she was released and ended up, even improving her situation. She was doing very, very well and ended up in the foster care system again, connected up with us one more time, and she's now very successful. She's in Job Corps. She's doing amazing things. Also, that collaboration that's come out of doing a lot of this community education is really important. The school district works very closely with us. Also, the juvenile department, at a moment's notice, they'll call me up and say, hey, can you come over and meet with some of these youth? So that has been great, being able to provide that, and also for them having the information. I just want to say this bill, it really is a framework for providing a statewide response to CSEC. And if you have any questions, feel free to ask. Thank you for your testimony.
Okay.
Sorry.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, I'm Joel Shapiro. And I want to thank Chair Barker for scheduling these bills so early in the session and for the members for their interest and attention. This is an issue that we've worked on a lot in the past, and I'll talk about that in a moment. I'm here on behalf of Shared Hope International and the Kids Are Not For Sale Coalition, which I represented 2 years ago during that session, and so I'll provide a little bit of institutional memory and context for that. But I want to start out by saying that this issue, as you've heard, has been on people's mind for many, many years, and it's wonderful to be here with so many leaders that have brought the attention to this issue, including Commissioner McKeel, who I think outside the legislature has been one of the foremost leaders in the state, including getting me involved in this issue when I worked with Senator Wyden and got to work on some bills starting at the federal level and then here in Oregon. And of course, Representative Tomei has been the champion on this issue for so long. And her work, not only last session, but in creating the kitchen cabinet group that started meeting last session and continued through the interim, is what led to House Bill 2205. And Representative Huffman and now Representative Taylor were both involved in that process from early on, and so I want to thank all of them for getting us here today. So just to step back a little bit to last session, because that explains both the policy and the resources that brought us to House Bill 2205. So Shared Hope International and the Kids Are Not For Sale Coalition represent a broad range of entities that are interested in this issue. Faith-based groups, service providers, such as Kirsten's organization that was involved last session, and law enforcement. And this is an issue where you have to have a comprehensive approach. And the hallmark of Oregon's success in addressing this issue is bringing everybody to the same table. Because if any one of those three are operating separately, it's not going to work. You're going to get disjunction, and that's going to hurt the victims. That's going to hurt law enforcement success, and it's going to allow the criminals that drive this problem, the traffickers, to be more successful in what they're doing. So it really does take a coordinated approach, and House Bill 2205 is the framework for doing that. So during the last session, we have a lot of new faces on this committee, and that's why I'm taking a moment. I know you have limited time, and I don't want to use too much of it. But for the benefit of the new people, we spent a lot of time talking about a comprehensive bill that addressed both the needs of victims, the needs of law enforcement, and cracking down on the perpetrators, particularly the Johns, that are driving the demand that allows this crime to continue to grow. And so we made it a felony to purchase sex with a minor. That was the hallmark of the bill. It was introduced by Representative Tomei and Representative Gilliam on the House side, Senator Close and Senator Johnson on the Senate side. And it was a little bit of a rough and tumble process, but we came out with a very good bill at the end of it. And as part of that process, we also began to work with President Courtney on funding. And he had a bill to address mental health. And I know Sarah Lochner's here, who was very much instrumental in that. And we worked with Representative Williamson and Senator Winters on Ways and Means. And we created the funding for the statewide shelter that you've heard about. Margaret Scott is here, who's running that shelter now. And so that has been a tremendous step forward, because without a safe place for the victims, you can't address the other components of this crime through law enforcement. So that has been a huge step forward. now that that is in place, we need to build the system out, because we have now a statewide shelter that can work with people from all over the state. We are, what House Bill 2205 would do is it would set up a statewide advisory committee. I've been working with DOJ, CVSD, Shannon Savelle in particular over there on what that is going to look like. And we're going to have that in place very soon. And as Aaron mentioned, Aaron Knott, to be able to bring together in a coordinated way both public funds and private funds is going to help us attack this problem. There are a lot of private resources out there, and now we have public resources committed to this for the long run. But if we don't marry those two together, again, you're going to get disjunction, and it's not going to be effective. So a lot of the private efforts this far have been sort of scattershot. We can bring them all together through the system that this bill sets up. So it's a huge step forward. And I'm going to pause there and just say I believe that we're addressing both bills.
Yeah, we are.
Okay. So I didn't want to come back for a separate hearing on a separate bill. So let me just mention a little bit House Bill 2206. And as you've heard from some of the previous witnesses, the vocabulary and the terminology is really important. And that may not make sense at first, but the way that we think about and talk about this crime is connected. And so the vocabulary that we use in the criminal code is significant to how people understand what's going on. And so I'll just briefly address it on two levels. First, there is a particular anecdote that I think helped lead to this suggestion that we change patronizing a prostitute to commercial sexual exploitation. And that is an incident that occurred in East County where there was a teenager at a bus stop, and a guy thought that she was involved in the commercial sex trade as a child sex trafficking victim and solicited her. And he got charged with patronizing a prostitute. And she is not a prostitute. She has never been involved in this industry in her life. And that may seem like a small thing. And, you know, the stigma that attached to her, you know, is one thing. But I think going to the other broader level, this is indicative of the way we think about this crime. So somebody who is being compelled to sell themselves for sex is not a prostitute. The word prostitution connotes a certain willfulness that they are choosing to engage in this conduct. And many of the people that are involved in the commercial sexual exploitation are not willful participants. They are compelled participants. And the way we talk about it and the way we think about it matters. And that's why I think that this bill is an important bill, even though on the surface of it, it looks very small. I know that Officer Gallagher from the East County precinct that used to be the prostitution team, they've sort of rebranded it. I spoke with him yesterday. He wanted to be here. He cannot be here. But he is very much in support of this bill. And he actually raised the point to me, well, if the legislature is going to change the term prostitution in this one context, why not in the others? And if you look at the other statutes that are right around 167007, the word prostitute or prostitution is used in a number of places. And I would just put it on the table today. It's something to think about for the rest of the session is, you know, should we consider changing that terminology as well? And the last thing that I will say is some of you remember last session, Representative Gelser, now Senator Gelser, had a bill to provide immunity for victims of sex trafficking for this very same reason, that they are compelled to participate in this criminal enterprise, not by their choice, but through force, fraud, and coercion of pimps. And I hope that this session we will have a discussion about immunity, because as Nita Bell said, this crime is about the John. This is a crime about the demand. This is not about the supplier, the person that's being forced to provide this service many times against their will. And if we are going to attack this crime, it's worth looking at an approach that's often called the Nordic approach or the Swedish approach, where they had a lot of success in decriminalizing the seller and going after the buyer. And the seller needs to be given services and treatment so that they have an alternative. and the buyer is the one that needs to be prosecuted. So I thank you for your time. I know I've taken up maybe a little more than you expected, but thank you.
Thank you. And I was watching a program last night, a news program, and they talked about the girls in Africa, the Boko Haram capture. And that's been almost a year ago now, and hardly anybody is interested in that anymore. But if somebody was to grab 200 girls and ship them off into this slavery, human slavery here, everybody would jump off. But and so they're taking that many, but they're taking them one at a time. And for most of us, we don't see that. Most people don't see that happening. So thank you for bringing that to our attention again. Okay, thank you very much, panel. Next we'll call Stacy Ayers, Margaret Scott, and Amy, looks like Baker, possibly. And you can go in any order, but please remember to identify yourself for the record.
Great. I've been nominated.
Good choice.
Chair Barker, my name is Stacy Ayers. I'm the interim branch manager for the Midtown office in Multnomah County for Department of Human Services. Formerly, I am still, I guess, the child safety manager for the Department of Human Services, and I've been in that position for about 7 years. The formal position of the agency related to House Bill 2205 is that we're neutral, and that has to do with the governor's support of the bill at this point. It's not been before him, so we are neutral. But I will tell you a little bit about my history with this group, and I'll be quick. You've got my written testimony, so I'm not going to read from that. I've been involved in this group for actually more than 2 years, but at some point along the way, it went from being called the CSEC group to the kitchen cabinet. And I'm not sure kind of how that happened, but it was kind of an interesting transition. I showed up one day, and we were referring to it as the kitchen cabinet, and I have a feeling that had to do with Representative Tomei with her holding the meetings at her house, is my guess. So from the testimony that you're reading, you know, there were a number of different agencies at the local level, county level, at the state level, and the federal level. You've heard that testimony today. It was a pretty remarkable group of people sitting at a table together and talking about this really profound issue that that Oregon is struggling with, but it's not isolated to Oregon. This is a national issue. And really, there are a couple things that this group kind of looked at. One of them was, hey, we need to have a shelter in Oregon. That was something that we were kind of tasked with the leadership of Representative Tomei. And you'll hear testimony about that. I think you've already heard that, that we were able to kind of put some things in place to make that take shape, and it actually occurred. The other thing that, another kind of goal, if you will, that we had talked about was the development of an advisory committee. And similar to the one that already exists at the Department of Justice, the Crime Victim Services Division, the Child Abuse Multidisciplinary Intervention Advisory Committee. I sit on that, so I'm aware of the function of the group. Really, it was a nice segue, if you will, to be able to develop some expertise, put on a committee expertise that could help direct funds from private donors. And you've heard about that today, that people are wanting to provide money to help support and train and advance the work that is being done here in Oregon related to commercially sexually exploited children. And so that was something else that was tasked the Department of Justice, and they moved forward. And what you're seeing with House Bill 2205 is, if you will, the ramifications of that. A fund, an advisory committee, and the ability to receive private funding for that. The other thing that I will point out that isn't really about House Bill 2205, but it's really about the federal legislation that was recently signed into law by President Obama. It is now known as House Resolution 4980. It's the Preventing Sex Trafficking and Strengthening Families Act, and it really coincides with House Bill 2205. It is in place now. It is a federal law, and really what it does is that it says to the child welfare programs, DHS, that we are going to develop, train, implement comprehensive programs to meet the needs of sexually trafficked youth, and that obviously is tied to funding, and it's for all the 4E agencies in the country. So, if 2205 is passed, it may help us with implementing those services, the tracking and training and things like that. So I'm happy to answer any other questions, any questions you may have, and I'll be available. So thank you. Best off to you.
Chair Barker, thank goodness you're back, because I was practicing saying your name in my head about five times. So, Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Amy Baker, and I am the Child and Family Manager with the Addictions and Mental Health Division with the Oregon Health Authority. And I, too, have been a member of the Representative Tomei's Kitchen Cabinet, and I'm here to speak to House Bill 2205, in part to give you some context around what some elements that House bill would do. Some of you have heard this spiel, but basically, the kids that we're looking to serve through this are challenging because they don't fit neatly into any one system. They don't always do very well in mental health services, in part because they don't think they have mental health problems. They don't see themselves as victims. They don't always do great in the foster care system because they run as soon as you place them there. And part of what the Kitchen Cabinet did was it really identified some serious gaps in the system. And through the leadership of Representative Tomei and Senator Courtney's commitment to funding mental health services, we were able to develop a residential program that opened in December, which Margaret Scott will talk to you about. I think that Oregon has a lot of really great things going for it in terms of this topic, but there are still areas that we need to develop. We still have gaps in the system. Residential is a really important part of the service system, but we also have to address where these young folks are going to go when they leave. What we really need is a statewide plan that ensures that we don't have young people falling through the cracks. We need to be able to screen them. We need to be able to prevent them from becoming trafficked in the first place, and when they are, we need to have appropriate resources to be able to serve them. And I think one of the pieces of House Bill 2205 is it gives a home for that effort to occur. So I, like Stacey, am neutral on the bill, but that I do think there are some key pieces in the system that would get addressed. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Barker and members of the committee, my name is Margaret Scott with Morrison Child and Family Services, and I'm here to tell you, in support of House Bill 2205, to tell you about Morrison's SAGE Youth Residential Program, which is the shelter that you've been hearing about. And we are extremely grateful to Representative Tomei and everyone on her kitchen cabinet. I did go to many of those meetings, and through their work, it has allowed Morrison the opportunity to open this program and to provide this very needed service for victims of commercial sexual exploitation. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about the program. I'll be brief. It is a residential program for girls who are victims of commercial sexual exploitation. We have space for 12 girls, ages 11 to 15. We do have some flexibility on the upper end and have actually taken some 16-year-olds at this point. We can serve girls from anywhere in the state, and those girls can be, the nice thing about our program is that the girls can be in the custody of DHS, their parents, OIA. There's not a lot of times prior to this program, parents had to put their kids in DHS custody to get services, and so we've sort of eliminated that. We also can take kids with private insurance, no insurance, Medicaid. So it's pretty open. The only real criteria is that they fit the age range, live in Oregon, and are victims of commercial exploitation. So it's a comprehensive program. Length of stay is expected to be 11 to 14 months. We offer on-site school that's provided by Portland Public Schools. We offer mental health treatment, alcohol and drug treatment, medical care, and then a supportive therapeutic milieu that includes a lot of aspects of just working with them day to day on the things related to their exploitation. I think there's a lot of power in being in a group of kids who've had the same experiences. And often these kids would feel very isolated when they went back to school or other places because nobody really could share their experience, and it really made it hard. So we provide that kind of shared experience. The youth there move through four phases of treatment, and the phases are what form the acronym SAGE. So it's support, achieve, grow, and empower. And as they move through those, what our hope is that they gain the knowledge and skills that we hope will allow them to successfully reintegrate into their homes, schools, and community. We really emphasize that being at SAGE is not a punishment, and actually that's been really hard with the kids we had because they feel like they're being punished. And so we really talk a lot about how our community has decided that this shouldn't happen to kids, and we need a place to keep them safe, and so that they're not being punished, but we need them there to be safe. The adults have decided that, you know, what was happening to them was not okay, and so that they're to be safe, to learn skills, and to hopefully be able to go back to their families and stay out of that life. That's obviously our hope. We really want to emphasize, in that line, emphasize their strengths and resilience. These girls have survived things that most of us can't even imagine, and they have incredible resilience and incredible strengths. So we really are focusing on that rather than, you know, what I think previously has happened, which what's wrong with you. You're broken, so you need to be fixed. Why did you do this? So really focusing on the fact that they're strong, they're resilient. We have on staff, we have obviously all the milieu staff who support the girls just every day, skills trainers. We have two peer mentors. That's a pretty integral part of our program, as well as we have a half-time nurse, case managers, and administrative along with that. Obviously, the ultimate positive outcome that we hope to have is that youth do not go back to the life of being commercially sexually exploited. That's our goal with every kid who walks through the door. We also realize that for many of these girls, it's going to take repeated exposures to treatment. So in line with that, some of the other outcomes we're really hoping to achieve would be that they get, while they're in our program, some basic education about the dynamics of exploiters and victims and how that works and how those people get them to do what it is they want them to do and what that's like. And that's going to really help to have their eyes opened a little bit to that. As well as education about trauma and its effect on behavior and its effect on the brain. We do some psychoeducational groups around trauma. Some of the other things that really are important is actually basic medical care. A lot of these kids have been so on the run. We've had a couple girls so far that have had some untreated medical issues that their PCP was thrilled that we finally had them in one place, that we could actually get them some treatment for these things. So that's another outcome that we're really hoping to get, is really get them medical care and education as well. Many have fallen way behind in education, have not been going to school. So this is an opportunity for them to, you know, recoup credits to actually feel successful in a school environment. We had a girl who was there just like 3 weeks and was able to gain some credits toward high school, which is great. So let's see. So we opened on December 29th, 2014, after an extensive facility renovation and intensive 2.5-week staff training that included training in the sanctuary model, which is our trauma-informed care model that Morrison uses, as well as collaborative problem solving, which is sort of our milieu management strategy, and a myriad of other kinds of training. We were able to take our first girl on January 2nd, and to date we've served six individual youth in our program. We've learned a lot. It's always bumpy, and I think Representative Tomei made a comment about how hard this was to get this started, and it really was, and our timeline was pretty short, and we are very excited about it. It's really looking forward to continuing. It has been a hard road. We have three youth currently, and all have been there over 30 days, which I actually think is an accomplishment at this point. So we're pretty excited about that. And we are just very excited to keep going. We have had lots and lots of referrals, and we're just screening referrals to find the most appropriate youth so that we can kind of create a positive culture and then moving forward. So I'm happy to answer any questions that you have if you have them.
One of the things I'd like to know later on after you've had a little longer period with people, in my career I've dealt with women in that situation, and it seems to me anecdotally that most of them had been abused as children, sexually abused as children, which is one of the reasons I really think no sympathy whatsoever for those kind of people.
The statistic is about 80 to 90%.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, that's one of the outcomes that it seems like sometimes people miss of these abusers. You know, that it's like this is a one-time thing, and it just goes out and really ruins the life of the young person, male or female, who's being exploited like that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And last but not least, Laura Rowan, please.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, my name is Laura Rowan, and I work with the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office, and I'm currently a member of our human trafficking team. So we have three district attorneys, deputy district attorneys assigned to that position. I work primarily with a team of officers that deals with street-level prostitution. One of them was referenced before, Mike Gallagher. He's a member of Portland Police Bureau's Sex Trafficking Unit. And I'm here to support the change in the language of the statute from patronizing a prostitute to commercial sexual solicitation 2206. I'm here to talk a little bit about why it's necessary. I know we've heard from a lot of other witnesses before, so I'll try not to repeat too much, but it oftentimes is misnaming women who are sex trafficking victims, who are children, or who aren't engaged in prostitution at all. Many of the women that are labeled by this statute as prostitutes were forced into this as children. And many of them, we talked about, are contacted on 82nd Avenue, which is in Portland. That's a hub of street level prostitution. Also on that same street, you'll find a community college and a high school. Oftentimes, men buyers of sex will approach women who they believe to be engaged or they want to be engaged in acts of prostitution, but they're actually just going to class. These women, if they report it to the police and this buyer of sex is charged, that woman from that point forward is labeled as a prostitute under the current statutory regime. These women referred to as prostitutes unfairly not only are stigmatized and further traumatized if they are victims of sex trafficking, but it also changes the focus from the behavior of the buyer to this naming a woman, something that's commonly referred to or commonly realized as derogatory. The name change more accurately describes the conduct in which the man is engaging in or the buyer is engaging in. As it currently exists, it assumes that these women are prostitutes, and this makes people in the society, jurors, assume that this is two consensual adults making an informed decision, when that's, as we all know and what we've heard from the other witnesses today, is inaccurate completely, as it oftentimes involves people who are forced into this sex trafficking or who aren't involved in sexual commercial activity whatsoever. So for those reasons, I'm here to support that language change. I don't believe it currently fits the nature of the conduct. The more we know about the sex trade, the more we know that these women are oftentimes not engaged willfully or voluntarily or even at all. So thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Any questions? Thank you very much. We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2205 and 2206 and open a work session on House Bill 2205.
Chair, I move House Bill 2205 with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2205 with a due pass recommendation to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Yes.
Chair Barker, I don't know who to ask this, so I'm going to depend on people on this committee to maybe help me. I've been, after I read this today and listened to all the testimony, and something just keeps coming back to me. I want to make sure I understand this. What the measure does, establishes fund to end commercial sexual exploitation of children. When I read that, end commercial sexual exploitation of children. I want it to end, okay? And I think probably we'd all agree on that, and I think everybody would. And I've heard all the testimony about the great ways which should continue to treat and help the victims. How do we end the commercial sexual exploitation of children? Is that being addressed? You know what I mean? I'm going to be blunt. Bust the scumbags. So where in here do we, the people who are doing this, that is so horrendous, how do we stop that?
Well, that's part of the reason they want to change the language to make it clear that these are exploited people, and that the Johns are the bad guys. The people buying are the bad guys. That's part of the, just by changing the language, that will help identify that. We work on also having civil fines of up to, I believe, $30,000 if somebody's hiring an underage girl. And I haven't seen any cases of that come back yet where that's been done. But in Representative Tomei's research, she found that a lot of the people who are hiring these young girls are businessmen, are successful people, are professional people. And by this getting them in there, getting arrested, and they are some kind of a diversion or something, and they kind of slip through the slime their way on out, by having to really get hit with a substantial fine, we think would get their attention there. And if we could get a few of those notice to the public, people might think twice before doing that. And it's, these women are exploited. I mean, if you ever dealt with any of them, well, they'll tell you how great it is. It isn't like, we've talked about this before, it's not like the movies. The prostitution is not like the movies. It's horrific. And these, especially these young girls that are taken out and convinced that they're what they're doing, and the only guy in the world that loves them is this, what we call a pimp, trafficker, and they'll be arrested. They'll get caught up in that, and they'll go back to the guy because he's the really, and that's why they need to be able to hold him in like the Morrison House and be able to treat these women, young women, and help them understand what's going on, because they're really damaged. I mean, it's a mental. They're mentally captive. They don't realize it, and they really don't believe it at first. So that's what we're trying to do. And this is just another step in the road. It's, you know, people always say it's the world's oldest profession. We would like to bring it to a stop, especially the exploitation of the younger girls. We have to take a bite of the elephant, one bite at a time to eat the elephant.
So that's a great analogy for me. Okay, thank you.
Representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have two questions. First, my ears must have shut off a moment. This is going forward with a new pass recommendation.
It is. To Ways and Means.
And now the question is, why is it going to Ways and Means since there's no money in this bucket? It's just creating some buckets. I hate to see something get lost in the morass of Ways and Means. Yeah.
So,
it's going to our committee. It's going to our committee. It won't get lost.
Well, still, why is it going to Ways and Means?
The fiscal came back with an indeterminate impact, mm-hmm. and so... because they don't know necessarily where the money is going to be coming from and if it's going to be diverted from other aspects of the agency. There was
is that right? That. I mean, is the intention to divert it from existing state funds?
Well, I think what the folks at Fiscal found was they just don't know, and they'd like to
have
some.
We have to talk about Ways and Means.
Yeah, that's what Ways and Means.
It'll be the Public Safety, Ways and Means Committee. Representative Krieger, myself, and Representative Williamson are all on that committee.
Those are the questions, Mr. Chair, that we will be asking in Ways and Means, Representative Greenlick, is where the money will come from to manage the account and all of that. And so those questions will be answered there. That's why it's going there.
Any further discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Close the work session on House Bill 2205 and open a work session on House Bill 2206.
Mr. Chair, do we have a count?
I'm sorry. Well, it's going down. It's going to be
Right. All right. Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2206 to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Representative Williamson moves House Bill 2206 to the floor with the due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Are there any objections? Hearing none, so ordered. Representative Williamson, would you carry that?
Actually, I think Representative Taylor.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Or Huffman.
Representative Huffman's here.
Yeah. Representative
Huffman and Taylor both.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. Okay. We'll open a public hearing on House Bill 2385.
Chair Barker, members of the committee. House Bill 2385 comes to us at the request of Attorney General Ellen Rosenblum. The bill amends language and statute pertaining to the crime of luring a minor. Specifically, House Bill 2385 provides that a person commits the crime of luring a minor if the offense involves a police officer who is posing as a minor. There is no revenue impact and minimal fiscal impact. There are no amendments, and House Bill 2385 is ready to move today.
Okay. Wynn again, and Michael Slauson, and Laura Roy, please.
Wynn Wakala, do I have to repeat all my information from before?
You just need to identify yourself.
Okay. Chair Barker and committee, I used to work for the Portland Police a long time ago and also the Washington County Sheriff's Office. I wasn't a police officer, but I worked both places. And I've also had the opportunity to meet a couple who actually got trained to do the things these police officers are doing over the internet to try to lure in girls. So I would like to have the law include people who are appointed by police, not just police officers themselves. And also in my voluntary work I've been doing across the state, I've been able to talk to different in different cities across the state. And I remember down in Coos Bay, we were talking to police officers, and one of them had just, if he would have received the training, he said a week before, he would have realized what was actually going on, that he answered a nuisance call, and a woman came to the door and was all nervous and said everything was okay. But he would have, and she was actually had a strong Russian-type accent. If he would have had the training earlier, he would have realized it was human trafficking. And currently, from what I understand, at the police academy, human trafficking is still an elective class. I would like, if I think you should consider having it be part of the training, or mandatory.
I'll check about that.
Okay.
It was my understanding it was part of the curriculum, but I'll check.
Yeah, it used to be just elective. I'm not sure. And then another thing I'd like to throw in, too, if I can, and I don't know where this would fall in. Liquor stores can't be near schools, right? We have exotic businesses right across the street from schools. I know we have freedom of speech, but if there were some way to at least see an exotic business at least as the same as a liquor store and try to regulate better where those are located.
The voters have spoken three times on that and said no on making those so you can zone them out.
And it can be right across the street from a grade school.
Yeah, or your neighborhood. I mean,
I don't care if it's, I just don't want to ride across the street from the school. Yeah.
Good afternoon, Chair Barker, members of the committee. My name is Michael Slauson. Excuse me, I'm here on behalf of the Attorney General to testify in support of House Bill 2385. House Bill 2385 represents a technical change to the luring a minor statute. It does not create a substantive change. The crime of luring was actually originally enacted in 2007, and its purpose was to criminalize grooming tactics employed by sexual predators on children. By grooming tactics, I mean deliberate tactics to desensitize children to sexual conduct and to cultivate a willingness on their part to engage in sexual conduct. And with that purpose in mind, and as the statute is currently written in its current form, the crime of luring a minor is committed when a person furnishes to a minor a visual, written, or a verbal description of sexual conduct and does that for the purpose of inducing that minor to engage in sexual conduct. That's the grooming that the statute seeks to prescribe. And back when this legislation was initially enacted, the legislature recognized that law enforcement has taken a very, very proactive approach in these types of cases and included a specific provision in the statute that it's not a defense to the crime if the minor who's being solicited was actually a law enforcement officer posing as a minor. And that's sort of ends up at the problem lies, and that House Bill 2385 seeks to fix. Is that I can think of at least one jurisdiction in which a court found that, given that the way that the statute is currently structured and the way that it is worded, the state must affirmatively prove in every case that the child was actually a minor. And the reason for that is because the way the definitional standards in the statute are is that it requires that a person be under 18 years of age and the crime is committed against a minor. And so as a result of that, the defense, the intent to make it so undercover operations would go forward, will never ever be applicable. And so all that House Bill 2385 does is to sort of restructure the statute and change some of the wording. And so it's very clear that the legislature intent is that the crime can be committed against a minor or in a situation in which a law enforcement officer is posing as a minor.
I would ask you, so I would, what Ms. Wachla said seems to make sense to me, or police agent. Should we not amend it to say or police agent, because it might not be an actual sworn officer making the posing? Like Portland has, I may have to hire somebody else do that, or
mm-hmm. kind of like a controlled by type situation. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. Just make it very clear that the intent is so that it could, I mean, because then I don't want a defense attorney, who it would be their job if they could do it, saying this wasn't a police officer, it was a police agent.
Chair Barker, that change makes sense.
Okay, thank you.
Chair Barker, members of the committee, again, Laura Rowan, sorry, I recently changed my name, for the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. I'm also here in support of 2385. The defense issue that was just described definitely fits, and from a trial level, is something that's problematic. Something that is not before you today, but I would ask that you consider as an amendment, is to also apply the same language to purchasing sex with a minor, which is ORS 163413. That was recently passed and makes it illegal to offer or agree to engage in sexual contact with a minor. Oftentimes, as you just heard from all the testimony on the last couple bills, we never have contact with those minors. So the people who are actually solicited, who are minors, aren't able to make these reports or aren't able to be enforced. However, through this same type of operation, using undercover police officers who pose as minors and make these deals, under the current statute as written, there's no exception for law enforcement to do that. And so the best that we can do from a prosecution level is have it be an attempted purchasing sex with a minor, which of course knocks it down to a Class A misdemeanor. And I know everyone worked very hard to make that crime a felony, and we described already the consequences that come along with that. So as you consider this bill, I would also ask that you consider that amendment. I drafted some language which was forwarded to Representative Taylor's office, and I believe will be forwarded.
I'll get that for you.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So we'll look into that, and we'll also, are there any questions for this panel? Thank you very much for coming down today and giving your testimony. I'm going to close the public hearing, and we'll get an amendment.
Change your names just for testimony.
So nobody can Google her. She's trying to hide.
Changes it every time.
Okay, thank you. Is there any further business to come before the committee? Or do you stand adjourned? Further business come before the committee. Or do you stand adjourned?